Well, Mr. Hemingway, you may proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, thank you, Your Honor, and thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of Carmetria Sanders. This case presents a single issue essentially dealing with whether the court below miscalculated the guidelines value for a couple of misdemeanor convictions. I'd like the court to bear in mind as we discuss the issue and as you consider the case that the very minimal nature of each of these of the offense conduct for each of these misdemeanors. In the first instance, the offense conduct in total consisted of his sitting in a car in the housing project, the Cochran housing project in St. Louis, where he was not supposed to be because he was on an exclusion list. The second incident a few weeks later was walking through the housing project where he used to live, and that's it. The parties agreed that the records relevant to the, what records were relevant for these misdemeanor convictions indicate that the only reason he received and served 80 days for both of those cases was because he didn't have the financial wherewithal to post bond in connection with them, the $250 bond for both, and then basically a $1,000 bond is 10% of another felony charge that came later. This is significant because this was the defense attorney telling the court that's why he was. This was 80 days, that it was his inability to make bond, not a judgment of his moral culpability. And most significantly, the assistant United States attorney, my esteemed colleague, now retired, Thomas Meehan, who said, and if I may quote him, Judge, where is his quote? The facts bear out he couldn't make bond and sat in jail until somebody could get out to get him out to a plea to time served.
Well, counsel, I mean, what's the significance of that comment? I mean, was it binding on the district court? Is it binding on us? I mean, certainly there was no fact finding on that particular issue, and I don't know the answer to my own question, which is why I'm asking you.
Yes, and I'm glad you're asking it, Judge Kobes. The actual judgment, the misdemeanor judgment, actually was not in court. And this is something, actually getting ready for the argument, although the government refers in its brief to this as supposedly quoting the judgment, the only record that the probation office had that I can tell, and I think it's identical to what we received from the clerk's office upon request, was a copy of the information, which didn't include, in Missouri, the original information to prosecute the misdemeanor incident. And so the impact of that is that I don't think that there was a clear record that this
Let me ask you this. Did trial counsel object to the points in the PSR?
That's a little bit of a yes.
I mean,
and no.
I'll tell you where I'm headed. I don't think trial counsel did. I think it was advanced as a separate basis for downward departure. And I, as a result, I'm wondering if this is a plain error review for us at this point.
Yes, and Judge, I totally understand, and it's a very rational point for you to raise, as it was for my friend on the other side of the table. Quite frankly, the reason that I was originally viewing this is that it was preserved was because there was objections filed to the original pre-sentence report. That was then withdrawn, and what gives the point you're making, Judge Kobes, and my friend on the other side's claim of plain error, you know, it's hard to argue against, is that there was a retraction, or it's a document, one-page document saying, well, I withdraw the prior objection that I made to the obstruction of justice, and I reserve the claim for the downward departure for overstated criminal history. It's pretty difficult to argue that this is preserved, and I'm happy rather than to spin my wheels to address plain error because I think it's easily established. I can't tell if you're asking me a question, Judge Cobes. Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you. I think that it's relevant. I believe that the error was plain here. You know, Assistant United States Attorney Meehan grew up. I mean, he's someone who knows, who gets the rhythm of a case just walking into a courtroom. And the fact that he looked at this record, the records that are here, and said, you know, the facts bear out that this sentence reflects only his inability to post bond, comes to the fact
that... Counsel, did the government join the motion for a downward departure or seek a lower sentence?
No, they did not join the motion for a downward departure. He conceded in the remarks that he felt that giving these convictions 2 points apiece instead of one, which inflated the guideline floor by 14 months, was in the U.S. Attorney's opinion oppressive.
Is that a direct quote? I don't remember that. It may be, but...
Oppressive is a direct quote. I'm going to maybe... Zach, I hope you can shake your head or not. I believe he did use the word oppressive, yes. What he relied on in opposing our request, I believe, for a lower sentence... was they didn't object to our making it, but I don't know that he actually joined in a request for a downward variance. He directed his remarks at sentencing more to what the judge should impose. I hope that's being responsive, Judge Cobes. There's no way, and I think that just from his growing up under his father's circuit court bench in St. Louis, and his many years as a St. Louis County prosecutor, that Assistant U.S. Attorney Meehan was demonstrating and confirming there's no way this minimal misdemeanor conduct warrants 80 days on its own, and that this was simply a function of his inability to make bond. I believe that
what is the rule you're asking us to apply here specifically?
Well, I would ask that the case be remanded for resentencing with a reduced criminal history score.
In other words, the law that would come out of this is what? That if an individual can't make bond or doesn't make bond, we need to consider or assume that he or she would have made it and what the minimum sentence would have been?
I'm not asking for that expansive sort of rule at all. It's just when the evidence plainly shows that the only reason someone got a sentence exceeding 60 days is that they could not make bond. This is not a blanket rule.
Then I'll ask you again, the evidence is a comment by counsel in the absence of an objection, and a comment by defense counsel, and an apparent comment or a comment by the assistant U.S. attorney as well, in the absence of objection.
When all of the evidence is showing that this was not a measure of criminal culpability, which is the function of criminal history points.
I see. Then I see. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. And since my time is zooming away, I would like to reserve a minute for rebuttal. I believe there's no problem making, if you accept that this is plain error, the impact on the guideline range and the fact that the judge imposed a minimum guideline even under the heightened range shows that there's a substantial likelihood of a lower result. I'd like to save my 50 seconds for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Bluestone?
May it please the court, Zach Bluestone for the United States. And Judge Kobus, I'd like to just jump right in on the question that you were asking about the AUSA's representations at the sentencing hearing. It's our position that the government is not bound by those, if you want to deem them concessions. I would characterize it more as responding to the actual request that was before the court, which was a motion for a downward departure. And the AUSA was merely explaining that, the two misdemeanor convictions may have overrepresented, and I think his language was a bit more couched. If you look at page 43 of the transcript, that was the relevant passage that he was discussing. He said, even if you accept that that portion of his criminal history was overstated, the remainder of his criminal history, including both prior convictions for drug possession and then pending charges, actually outweighed any overrepresentation on the misdemeanor convictions and made his total criminal history underrepresented, which was the basis on which Judge Clark denied the motion for downward departure. And I think it would be particularly problematic to bind the government by those representations where the defendant did not object to the PSR, which specifically references 80-day sentences, not sentences for time served. And in fact, you can easily pull the judgments, and I'm guessing that that's probably what the assistant federal public defender at the time did, as well as the probation officer. You can pull them up on Missouri CaseNet using the case number that was referenced in the motion for a downward departure. And the government has included the actual judgments in the addendum, which shows that he was actually sentenced to 80 days, not to time served. And that's important because it shows that he wasn't simply sentenced to time served. The state court judge in that case actually picked the sentence of 80 days. So unlike other cases like Drake and Urbizu, in which this court has rejected identical arguments, there is actually no evidence here indicating that Mr. Sanders would have received a lesser sentence but for his alleged inability to post bond. And in fact, I think the 80-day sentence probably was very intentional because he actually was in custody for 83 days. The state court judge could have sentenced him to 20 days if he'd wanted to. And the 80-day sentence strikes me as appropriate because in a global settlement of not only those two misdemeanor charges, the state also agreed to dismiss a pending felony charge against Mr. Sanders at the time. So it's no surprise that he received 80-day sentences for those two misdemeanor convictions. Turning really to the merits of Mr. Sanders' claim, which I don't think was addressed in depth in my friend's opening remarks, the sentencing guidelines simply do not permit a district court to discount points for prior convictions, even if they think that they're inflated. Instead, the guidelines allow for departures for overrepresented criminal history if it's substantially overrepresented. Mr. Sanders capably made that argument before Judge Clark, and he simply disagreed with that assessment. And as pointed out in the briefs, that decision is unreviewable on appeal, which is likely why we see this repackaged argument about a miscalculation. Applying the plain terms of Section 4A1.1b, defendants receive 2 points for prior sentences that are between 60 days and 13 months. And because there's no dispute here that Mr. Sanders actually served more than 60 days, he gets 2 points for both of those convictions. This court in Drake pointed out that the Sentencing Commission itself has acknowledged that looking to the maximum in term imposed can be an, quote, imperfect measure. But that's why there's Section 4A1.3, which allows for the downward departure on this basis. Mr. Sanders availed himself of this recourse. The district court denied it, and that decision is not reviewable. If I may briefly address the alternative basis of affirmance, which is, I take it that Mr. Sanders is now conceding that plain error applies, but either under the plain error analysis or the harmlessness analysis, the district court made it abundantly clear that it would have imposed the same sentence irrespective of Mr. Sanders' criminal history category. Specifically on page 53 of the transcript, Judge Clark specified that regardless of Mr. Sanders' argument concerning his criminal history being inflated, he would have imposed the same sentence by way of variance or otherwise. And that distinguishes the Haney case that Mr. Sanders cited in his 28J letter. In that case, as an initial matter, it was not a plain error case like this one is. But more importantly, the district court made its alternative finding in the opposite direction. It said that if the guidelines range had been higher, it would have imposed the same sentence. But the error that that court committed would have made the absence of that error would have made the actual sentence lower, or the guidelines range lower. That was the basis that the Haney court rejected harmlessness in that case. Here, the district court made it clear that even if the guidelines range were lower, that it would have imposed the same sentence. Unless the court has any specific questions, the government would ask that the court affirm Mr. Sanders' sentence. Thank you.
All right, thank you, counsel. Mr. Hemingway?
Thank you very much. I appreciate my friend pointing out that addendum, which I had missed. And yet, my argument remains, I think it raises the same issues, even saying 80 days jail time allowed in terms of what that means. And I think that it's when you have an instance of an experienced prosecutor and the PSR's report that this was sitting in a car and walking down the street of a childhood home, that was the offense conduct, that and the explanation which the government joined in is that this was only to avoid, because he couldn't get out on bond earlier, that this deserves generally only 1 point. The statements that I would have that the court would have imposed the same sentence are of the blanket sort. They're not like the very detailed analysis the court relied on to find harmlessness in the LaRoche case. And I thank the court very much for hearing us out.
Very well. Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your argument today. The case is submitted. The court will render a decision in due course.